Welcome to Discussing Rhythmic Gymnastics, the podcast we know you have been waiting for.
Hi, and welcome everybody back to another episode of Discussing Rhythmic Gymnastics. I'm Sophia.
And I'm Christine.
And this episode is a very, very special episode because we are not recording at home. We are at the German National Training Center for Rhythmic Gymnastics.
And we're so excited!
And we are talking with a very special person. And I have to say, dreams actually do come true.
Yeah, one wouldn't actually believe that, right?
Yeah. So you may recall that I talked in one episode about a dream I had where I watched the German national group perform at like a corporate event. It was kind of weird. And I got to interview Camilla Pfeffer and I was very excited because she is the coach of the German national group. And today we are here sitting with Camilla.
Welcome. Across from us, a very warm welcome. Nice that you're here and that it worked out everything so well and that we're welcomed here. We already got to watch a little bit of training and we're very, very excited. I have to admit, I was kind of close to tears because it's so emotional. And being here at last after just seeing the footage online and on YouTube and being shown on television and having all these in our sport famous girls training here is just incredible.
Yeah, so Camilla, for our listeners who don't know who you are, please tell a little bit about yourself and your career in rhythmic gymnastics and what you do now.
I'm Camilla Pfeffer and I'm the coach of the national group of Germany and of the senior group. And this is my full-time job I do right now. Mm-hmm. And before I was a gymnast, I started rhythmic gymnastics at the age of 7, before I was in artistic gymnastics, actually.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
Yes, because my older sister, she did artistic gymnastics and she was quite good. Mm-hmm. And of course, I wanted to do the same as my big sister. Uh-huh. But it turned out that we are very different. She was very brave and very strong and very fast. And I was more tall and thin and slow. And and after 2 years of not being very successful in artistic gymnastics, the coach proposed to me to go to rhythmic gymnastics.
What a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I ended up in rhythmic gymnastics and I loved it from the first moment. Oh, I mean, I knew it directly that I'm at the right, somehow in the right point.
Good.
Yeah.
You were quite successful then in Germany as a gymnast. Tell us a little bit about your accomplishments
and
because
your active
they
time.
Are really great accomplishments.
Yeah. In the beginning, I was, I think, not very successful. When I started, actually, I think not even very talented, but I mean, my dream was always to come to Schmieden. Mm-hmm. When I was a small gymnast, because I come from Tübingen and it's not far from here. Mm-hmm. So quite fast, you get to know that everything in rhythmic gymnastics somehow happens in Schmieden. Mm-hmm. And then there were some small camps or something here. And so I started, but I worked very, very hard and slowly I got better and better. And in one camp in Schmieden, after they asked me if I want to come to Schmieden to, mm-hmm. to join here, to work here. And so I moved from Tübingen to Schmieden and I lived in the internat. Mm-hmm. And I was when I was 12 years old. And then I started to work in juniors as a junior individual, still not being very successful. Just in my last year, then slowly it got better and better in my last junior year. And 2018, I took part in the Junior European Championships in Torino. And we took, I think, maybe 10th place. Mm-hmm. I have no idea.
That can be found on the internet, I'm sure.
Can find all the results online, I'm sure, yeah.
And then in end of 2008, because the group back then did not qualify for the Olympic Games.
Yeah, they didn't participate in Beijing, right?
Yes, and till that time, the group was always in Wattenscheid. The German national group was always, it was the training center for the group. Mm-hmm. Individual was in Schmieden and group was in Wattenscheid. And then the German Federation decided to put the group to Schmieden and to only have group also. They decided not to invest anymore in individual, because they were thinking in that time that the chances in the group are much better to qualify, which for sure I think for this period was true.
Yeah, that's why we didn't have any international gymnasts represented for a longer period of time in that time.
So again, exactly.
Yeah. for every listener who doesn't understand any German, an internat is what we would call a boarding school.
Right.
So that's the concept of living where you go to school and having your own room or have shared rooms with classmates, etc.
And so here in Schmieden, it all is like on one campus, so the students can just walk to the gym and have their training there.
Yeah.
And then 2012. Something special happened in that year?
Maybe? Yeah, something. I mean, 2009, then the group started. We started with the group, and I was also the captain of the group. I felt very, very good in the group. I felt much better in the group somehow as a gymnast. I felt more safe, and I could develop better, I think. So for me, it was a very good thing. And then 2011, we qualified for the Olympic Games in the direct way. It was very, very... I mean, very emotional.
Then you can only imagine,
Unbelievable, because somehow I didn't even understand what was happening. I actually, in this World Championship, maybe I remember bad. I think I was not even very clear that we could qualify on the direct way to the Olympic Games. We were just going and trying to show our best, something like this, and we took the sixth place and...
That was very, very cool.
Yeah.
I mean, that was in 2011 in Montpellier, right?
Yes.
In France as well. Okay. Yeah, I've seen a lot of footage of that. That was like the first time when, after the competition, a lot of YouTube videos were coming and popping up, and you were able to just select a country and be like, hey, what's the team of Japan doing? And you could rewatch all the videos.
It's true. But I mean, it was for a long time not possible.
Exactly.
When I tried to watch some videos of me when I was younger, because sometimes I'm interested in how I was as a gymnast, because I think I remember much different from how it actually was.
Yeah.
But there is no video. I have not one video of me being, I mean, younger than 15 and doing rhythmic gymnastics. I have no clue how I was.
I Googled you, I have to admit. And I found, I think the oldest video I found is from the Turin Championships in 2008.
Yes.
I mean 2008.
Yes.
Yeah, 2008. Yeah. Exactly. So you did well with the rope. So that was all I can say as an individual gymnast. And then newer videos of 2009 and international competitions and so on, but nothing older than that.
Yes.
There's hardly anything you can find. I mean, you can find like videotaped stuff from world championships back from the 90s and the 80s and stuff, but nothing on a like national level or something. So that's good that it's different now, but kind of a shame that we don't have older footage.
All right. So you took part in the Olympic Games in 2012. What was your overall experience like? Were you
from the Olympic Games?
Yeah.
I think I was so excited and also a little bit distracted, because so many things are happening in the Olympic Village. I mean, for me, it was, I was just curious and just watching around all the time, and was very difficult to keep the focus somehow. In the end, it was not our best competition, but it was also not our best year, 2012. I think we peaked already in 2011. As a group.
Okay.
And then in 2012, we were having some problems, some trouble with injuries. And so it was going down a little bit. And I mean, looking back, sometimes I feel a little bit sorry for that. I think also I could have maybe invested a little bit more. And but in the end, it was okay. We took 10th place in the Olympic Games. I'm very, very happy and grateful to be Olympic gymnast. And after I actually, it was also very hard time, and after I felt so tired, so I was sure to stop also as a gymnast.
Okay, mm-hmm. So that was marked the end of your career, yes, as an active gymnast.
How old were you at the Olympic
19.
Games? 19. Yeah, wow. Well, that's still quite young to experience such an amazing event, yes, and could be quite overwhelming. And under that aspect, I think like 10th place from like maybe 5 years ago, and you look back to a German group at 10th place at the Olympic Games, you're like, oh wow, they were really, really good.
Yeah.
And well, we are on our way to maybe even a better...
Let's hope so. I want to see the group on the podium. Yes. What are you talking about?
We are hoping to go to the all-round final, but still, it's our big goal to go to the all-round final now.
So fingers are crossed. We hope that you'll manage, and that all the girls will stay healthy. That's the most important thing.
Yes.
And that everybody can enjoy the experience to the fullest.
So you decided to finish your active career and decided to become a coach, or how could we imagine?
No, not at all. When I stopped, I was sure I will not do something with rhythmic gymnastics for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yes, somehow after, I mean, it's a lot of work. And I spent all my life in rhythmic gymnastics, and I needed a break. Mm. It was clear to me.
Understandable.
And so I finished the school already in 2011, and mm-hmm. I started studying chemistry 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
So yeah, I did one semester in chemistry, and then I did a break because of the Olympic Games.
Mm-hmm.
So when I finished my career, I decided to go on with my studies, and I studied chemistry, and it was a very nice time. Actually, I'm very happy that I had this just being a very normal student mm-hmm. time. I had a very nice time there.
Having more free time even?
Yeah.
Although I think chemistry is quite the subject to study.
I don't think chemistry leaves a lot of free time if you study chemistry.
But maybe more freedom in what you do in your free time.
Spare time.
Yeah, more freedom. And I was not going to a lot of lessons, actually. I really enjoy my free time in this year. So it was for 1 year I just studied chemistry. Mm-hmm. And then my old coach, Elena Karatsev, she called me and she asked me if I want to work with the small girls.
Mm-hmm.
They needed a coach for the very young, I mean, mm-hmm. for the 10 years old, mm-hmm. individual. And I mean, how it is when you're studying, I was always broke.
Yeah, that's
I
normal.
I need some money. And I was thinking, yes,
okay,
let's do it.
Yeah.
So I started, I mean, next to my studies, I started mm-hmm. working as a coach mm-hmm. with the small ones, and it was like, yeah, 450 euro job.
It was like, we call it a mini job in German. And it's a certain fixed amount of money for which you don't have to pay taxes if you just earn that. So, that's like the basis entry level on which you can do, like, we would call it a side hustle, maybe.
Yeah.
Which you could do while you're still studying. I did it as well after graduating from school, just to earn some money before going on to university. What we did as like coaching wise, it was always considered to be volunteer work,
mm.
and it's only compensated with even less than the mini job money. So
It's just really a bit of pocket money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. But that's good, like as a student, to have this entry level mini job and like doing what you know very well, actually, and being able to.
But being a gymnast is so different from being a coach, and I'm very glad that I had the chance to start from, from not the bottom. I mean, I didn't start with 5 year mm-hmm. old, but mm-hmm. with 10 year olds, I'm happy that they already could do something.
Yeah.
I don't know what would it be like to start from nothing.
It's we get that, yes.
Very exhausting. Because we did that, actually. Yeah. We started with the 5 and like 4, 6 year olds, maybe.
Yeah.
And when they don't know how to point their toes, and if they don't know how to stretch their like
when
legs,
they don't know what it means if you say turn left.
Yeah. And now releve, and they're like, what, like, go on your tippy toes. And it's like very, very slow and very exhausting, but still so rewarding when you see how quick they learn. And was it and the same for you? That
I think like the 10-year-olds are still in that what is called the golden age. Yes. I think it goes up to 12 where
it's
they are
very, very
quick
nice
learners.
Age. I mean, in this age, they are so easy to handle, actually, mm-hmm. because somehow they are still happy and easy. It's not so serious, mm-hmm. although they are already here at the center, but it's not that serious. So it was very nice age to start with. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed this a lot. I mean, I had a lot of fun working with these girls.
That's
and
great.
I think this was why I somehow maybe did also a good job. Mm-hmm. Because then after a few years, I think it was 2017, the coach of the group back then, she asked me if I want to be like a co-trainer mm-hmm. of her. And I took this offer, although I did not finish my studies in that time. I did my master's degree, mm-hmm. I think, 2017. Yeah. I think I did my master's degree. And then I was thinking how to go on. I mean, I had this offer to do this job mm-hmm. as a co-trainer. I also wanted to do my PhD in chemistry. And the Federation said if I will work as a national coach, I have to study in Cologne for a diploma trainer.
It's like
extra
okay,
study
okay,
for coaches
yeah.
on high level. And mm-hmm. So I did everything.
Oh, God.
Because I couldn't decide. I did everything. And
how? I mean,
I don't know. Now, if I look at back, I have no idea how.
Because, I mean, getting a PhD in chemistry, no less, is like, I mean, all the doctors are going to hate me, like the medical doctors, because getting a PhD in medicine is like a piece of cake in comparison to getting a PhD in chemistry. I have enough chemistry friends who, yeah, I know that. Yeah. And also enough who studied medicine and who know like, yeah, like I wrote my medicine PhD in like 4 months. And it's like compared to 4 years in chemistry, it's a lot of work. It's many hours in the laboratory. And you did also like while getting the PhD in chemistry, you went on to get your degree in like coaching.
Yeah.
And while coaching here. What?
It was crazy time. So actually my day was like I stood up, got to the university. I did my work for the PhD. But I have to say, normally you are paid for your PhD mm-hmm. with the
small compensation.
Small
as well,
compensation.
Yeah.
So I didn't have any contract mm-hmm. at the university. So I was completely free in okay. my how to use
time
my
management.
Time. Yes. Yeah.
That's good.
So normally you have to do something and you have to give some lessons to other mm-hmm. students. I didn't have to do anything.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
So that was the good part. I went to the university. I did something around till 2 o'clock maybe. Then I came here to the gym mm-hmm. and I did my training. And then this diploma trainer, mm-hmm. it was in Cologne mm-hmm. and always 4 days per month. I mean, I had to go there and then for 4 days, you just have a lot of lessons, mm-hmm. like theoretical and practical lessons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very, very interesting. And
it's what we would call probably a Blockstudium.
Yes. Yeah.
And we will maybe look up that word, but you explain it very well, actually.
Yeah.
So you
yeah.
only have a couple of days in a month where
yes.
you have to actually go there and do the
yes.
work. And
and
then
in Cologne, probably at the Sporthochschule?
No, it's not the same. It's directly next, to located mm-hmm. next mm-hmm. to the Sporthochschule, but it's separate. It's from the DOSB, so the German Olympic Federation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's really extra for all Olympic sports to for the coaches mm-hmm. on high level.
So this was quite specific to rhythmic gymnastics, what you did? Or
no, just specific to high level sports.
Okay.
Okay.
So
yeah.
how you handle
how
you athletes
yes.
on that level?
How, I mean, the psychological effects, first everything that happens in the body. We had mm-hmm. anatomy and allgemeine Trainingslehre.
General
training
studies.
Methods.
Yes.
Studies on training
yeah.
methods. Yeah.
Things like this, everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a big, big spectrum. Even like some... I mean, how to behave right, of course, but in terms of law, for example.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everything that you can imagine, what like maybe a coach on high level needs, but yeah. in mm-hmm. all the general stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then for some, sometimes you had some tasks to use your knowledge for your sports.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then you got some mark for that, for mm-hmm. example.
But this is actually very useful that the German Olympic Federation offers something like that yes. and requires people to get a degree to be able to coach these Olympic sports and to go on international tournaments yes. so that the coaches are really well prepared.
And also they want to have more value for the for this job as mm-hmm. a coach. They yeah. want to show that they have a certain degree,
exactly.
which they also put in the system of being bachelor masters. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if you would study one more semesters, I think in Leipzig at the Sporthochschule, mm-hmm. You would have a bachelor's degree.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
So if you want to do this, you can. I mean, they put it somehow in the system, yeah. so it has a certain
it's
level.
It's recognized internationally yes. then as well.
And
that's very smart.
Are only coaches studying there who are like already invited to coach or going to coach or are there also like normal people allowed there who just want to get this kind of education, even though
no.
they are not connected to an Olympic sport or
no,
something?
No, because your federation, so the DTB, mm-hmm. Deutscher Turnerbund, has to...
The German Gymnastics Federation has to like recommend you that you should go there and...
So, ich muss das kurz nachdenken. Yeah. Also ich bewerbe mich beim DTB quasi und der DTB gibt es weiter an die...
An diese mhm.
Also entscheidet, welche Bewerbungen weitergegeben werden.
Ah, okay. So,
that's
fine. That's good.
Mache ich auch schon.
To rephrase that, so the person who wants to get this coaching degree has to apply for it with their respective federation. In that case, the German Gymnastics Federation, and then the German Gymnastics Federation hands these. The applicants' forms over to the Olympic, like the Hochschule for the Olympic
yes.
Sports Federation,
exactly.
A German Olympic Sports Federation. Yeah.
So not all coaches are really on high level. There mm-hmm. are also some coaches that are maybe in the clubs, but maybe mm-hmm. the federation decide that maybe they will be good coaches, mm-hmm. or maybe this is an important club for the development of the sports.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of reasons mm-hmm. why mm-hmm. maybe you will go there, but you have to go through your federation mm-hmm. somehow.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Yeah, but that's actually quite smart because the individual federations know their people and coaches best
yes.
already, and
yes.
they usually are well-known names because they were active in the sport before or they have been coaching for quite some time in certain clubs or whatever.
Yes. And of course, you need to have a license already, mm-hmm. so the highest license, and you need to finish your school with an Abitur.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So all of that, of course, is still
all right.
I didn't know that you, I mean, that's quite interesting that you actually need that school like degree
mm-hmm.
to actually become a coach because you have to study.
You have to go to university.
Yeah.
The Abitur is kind
of. I never thought about this.
Yeah, but that's why most of the coaches already like oftentimes push the athletes to like do well in school and to put in the work, because without their Abitur they don't have that many chances afterwards, because
yes.
like even continuing to coach in your sport you need to mm-hmm. be able to study just to
yes.
Like put the degree with the respective profession
mm-hmm.
and to like make it respectable in
yes.
that
yes.
sense.
Yeah, that's the reason. And it's very nice, I have to say, because you speak to all the different sports
mm-hmm.
and it's so interesting because more or less the problems are the same.
Mm-hmm.
sometimes we think we are in our small worlds with our big problems, but actually this is not true. It's everywhere the same. And then how everybody copes with them
mm-hmm.
that problems is very interesting.
You can learn from one another.
Yes. And somehow this is something that stays for your life. This time with all, I mean... very interesting people, of course, if they come from all sports, it's
mm-hmm.
just very interesting group, and was good time.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely. All right, so we've kind of already covered the question, how or when did you decide to become a coach, and
yes.
What the process and transition was like. So we want to know what, in your eyes, makes a good rhythmic gymnastics coach. Did you have experiences in the past with training methods, or did you not like anything that influenced you as a coach now today?
I think as a good coach, you really need to have your own idea. I mean, your way, your vision mm-hmm. of where you want to go, mm-hmm. what you want to see. What I mean, when we do the routine, I have already some kind of vision in my head mm-hmm. how I want to look. So mm-hmm. I'm actually working to fulfill this vision that is somehow in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is very important, because you need to have one line that you will just follow.
Mm-hmm.
And this, you need to also communicate this line very clear.
So transparency is very important.
What you want to see, what is important to you. So everybody somehow can follow also you
mm-hmm.
On that way. I think that's very, very important. And then, of course, you need to somehow inspire or catch the people to go with you that way, which I think is very, very difficult. But if you work so many hours, how we do, it's very important to have everybody in the same boat and to work in one direction.
I mean, this is not a job interview, but the next question kind of sounds like a job interview question. What would you do if you noticed you have a gymnast which doesn't quite catch on or isn't on your page? So you have the feeling you have to get through to this gymnast and make her come along.
I think, first of all, I would try to understand what is the problem, mm-hmm. why she is not following, maybe. Mm-hmm. And if it's not working after a while, actually, it's not possible then.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes we have this, as a coach, I have to think about team always.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I mean, my first
priority
is always the team.
Mm.
Also the individual is important, but I'm responsible for the team.
Yeah.
So I always have to think what is best for the team, and then I have to maybe take the decision to take out somebody if it's not.
So if the problem isn't solvable.
Sometimes it happens.
Okay.
So what actually really interests us is when gymnasts come to Schmieden, or like you said, you were like spotted at an event. How does this work? Who decides which girls from all over Germany are invited, and
who gets to perform as an individual and who gets put in a group? How is the decision process here?
I mean, in general, it's a little bit different if we speak about the young age, mm-hmm. because then it's also not me being responsible, but they just look in the younger age here in this area. I mean, we mm-hmm. don't look for whole Germany, mm-hmm. but we have some good clubs around Tübingen, Ulm, mm-hmm. with Züfflingen and Sindelfing. There are some good clubs mm-hmm. here around, so we look maybe if there are some good gymnasts. And then, because it's more easy when they come to Schmieden earlier,
mm-hmm.
because they are used to the work here, which is mostly harder, a lot harder than in the clubs. And they are not so far from home mm-hmm. if they come from the region. And so they are more used to the school system. Mm. It's more easy. First of all, somehow we try to build up our own
kids who are from the region, actually.
Because
it's just easier.
Obviously here in Schmieden, the TSV Schmieden is a club itself. So
yes.
mm-hmm. From there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we do once or twice a year, a camp where we invite the girls who we think could be good for the group.
Mm-hmm.
And normally, we look at the results from the last German championship. Mm-hmm. And then we say, okay, maybe until 10th place, we will invite. But sometimes also some coaches recommend somebody mm-hmm. to us.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they say, look, I have a nice gymnast. She was not so successful in individual, but I think she can be good for the group. Mm-hmm. Also, this happens.
Mm-hmm.
And we invite them then to this camp. And then for two, 3 days normally. And then I would just watch everybody and try to find out who's good for the group.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, I see it quite fast. It's okay. quite visible.
So what are the qualities that you look for in a gymnast?
First of all, like the in general, the physical
abilities,
composition, yeah. abilities, what they can do, how they are with the apparatus, which is mm-hmm. for the group even more important. Mm. I mean, about the physical abilities, we can work also a little bit. Of course, they need to have a split mm-hmm. and all that. But I mean, we have ballet here and we can work also mm-hmm. about this, but they need to have very good coordination for the mm-hmm. group. They need to be fast and yeah. strong. Mm-hmm. I mean, to have very long lines and very long legs, you will have some trouble in the group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To be so fast and to be so strong, because they need to have a lot of muscles. And mm-hmm. yeah, and they have to do 2 minutes and 30, not yeah, 1 minute and 30.
That's a lot more,
it's
yeah.
It's another difference. And of course, they need to be somehow, and that's most important, able to work in a team. Mm-hmm. And you can recognize this quite fast. If, for example, I give them a task to work a piece of our routine, mm-hmm. and if they will look at each other, or they will just care about themselves to catch, or something like this, it's very visible if somebody is good for the group or not, normally. Mm. And then, I mean, I try to put all this down in
a spreadsheet.
And then we also give a feedback to the girls, of course. Yeah. So after this camp, everybody will receive a feedback, so they know if we maybe want to see them again after maybe a year or half a year, or if maybe they are not right for the group, which of course also happens. Mm. But then we are always grateful for everybody who comes here and wants to show up, because you never know.
And it's also a lot of commitment often by the families who travel many kilometers. It's often, depending on where you live in Germany, it can be up to, I don't know, 700, 800 kilometers. If you come from the northern part, it's quite a travel and accommodation for several families. So if they're willing to make this adjustment and this change, and then, of course, you as a club are thankful for the families and the girls, like putting their talent in your hands and then
and
going from there.
It's working best if it's a little bit long term. I mean, long term is maybe the wrong word, but if it's a little bit planned, this change from, for example, a lot of girls come from Berlin because they were also is a big center in Germany. Yeah. So it's more easy if it's really planned for maybe 1 year, let's say. To say, okay, we would like to have you here. Maybe they will even finish the school in Berlin, because the system,
is so different.
Yeah.
Yeah, who are you talking to? I mean, I know that even the switch between Bavaria and Baden-Württemberg and then also Hesse is completely different. We live very close to the border of these three different states, and
luckily, because otherwise I maybe not have gotten my Abitur.
Yeah, so you made the switch actually, Sophia.
Yeah.
So
I transitioned from Bavaria to Hesse, and I did like the higher school level there.
Just because it's a different system, it's
Bavaria is very difficult. I think it's most difficult in Germany.
Yeah.
I think only Thüringen is very close. Baden-Württemberg's not that far off, but it's when you look to Berlin and to Bremen and to Hamburg, for example, it's no comparison. Like the highest level you could go there is like our lowest level or second level, maybe.
Yeah.
It's so different in how they how they do tests and stuff.
Yeah, and for me, the most
biggest difference,
and also in a positive way, was that
participation
in the class counted so much more than in Bavaria.
Yeah.
So if you screw up a test, it's not like the end of the world. You can still get a great mark if the teacher notices you and notices that you actually know your stuff and you want to learn. So
It's changed over the past couple of years. We have a different curriculum now. And so in Bavaria, we calculate the grades differently than when I went to school and then how you went to school probably, or we went to school. So it's closer now to each other, but still the fact that participation counts more in different states makes so much difference, and just being able to show in different ways
and
what you can do and how well you know your stuff, that's
and
just
this is very clear that this is a great factor to consider moving
within Germany.
When you are doing very good at school and maybe risking losing that.
Yeah.
And we talked before how important this is to finish your school good. And then in the end, it doesn't matter if you finish in Berlin or in Baden-Württemberg. Nobody cares in the end. But then for them, it makes a big difference, especially also for the parents, of course.
Exactly.
So this is somehow it's a big topic always with the school.
And what you always have to consider, I mean, it's like taking your sport to the like highest level, to the Olympic level, you always have to consider the risk factor of getting injured. So you, that's never a safe option trying for, I want to become the best possible, I want to go for the Olympic Games, because you need the education as something to fall back onto just in case you might get injured and your career might be over within a second. So that's definitely a big decision that all the families, even this, like even if they're as young as 11 or 12, they have to consider this, which is a lot of pressure at that age.
And I think that is something great in Germany, that like it is looked after the girls, like not the sport is the non-ultra, can I say that?
Yeah, I think it's not the most important
thing. So they have to get educated all around. And
they're not
the sport
used.
Has to fit into the school system and not the other way around.
Yeah.
Even though, like here with the boarding school, it is kind of like it's a symbiosis.
Kind of, yeah. And they they just make accommodations to enable a successful sports career, but it's made sure that they have an education. And it's not that way in all the countries. I mean, when we look to the US, quite often they're homeschooled to fit some training schedules, and the quality of homeschooling is not always managed or looked after. So, I mean, that can work well, of course, but often it's not the case. And so at least we have the general Abitur in all our 16 states, and that usually works quite well.
And now we also have a very good system here in Schmieden that is working actually very well. So when they come to finish the school this last 2 years, they can stretch them to 3 years.
Oh, wow.
So instead of doing two, they can do three. And instead of having 30 hours per week lessons, they only have 20.
Yeah.
Which make a big, big difference.
Absolutely.
So we have a very good way now with the school. And also when they miss, they have... I mean, everything will be taught to them after by some special teachers. For example, they come here and they can repeat everything. So, but it took a lot of time. It's a lot of work. And still, when they come from Berlin or Bremen, for them is
it's very hard. Yeah,
but it's better already. Yeah. It's better. But this is somehow. So this process or this decision is made by so many small details that they have to fit.
And it needs so much work to coordinate all these extra, timetables and schedules. Because, I mean, working at a school, I know how tricky it is to just come up with a timetable that works for everybody. Yeah. And then to like fit in extra students that you're like, okay, so I have classes from then to then, and then in the afternoon I have to move over to the training center because this student missed like the last 3 weeks or something, and I need to like give her special coaching. It's more work for the teachers, it's more work, especially administrative work for the school, but it's so great that they make this possible because they know how important it is for these athletes to as well finish school as to pursue their career. So thank you to Gustav Stresemann Gymnasium. Yeah, thanks for making that possible. And
is there like a mandatory achievement that gymnasts have to like accomplish or grades they have to get to still train here, or
no?
That's completely up to them.
If we get from the school that they are very bad, for example, in school, of course, first of all, we try to help them with more extra lessons in school or maybe to have a little bit less training. And then it also depends in which point of their sports career they are. Then, but actually, we haven't...
Has that happened?
They're all hard workers here, so I guess
I think
not.
Of course, some girl maybe struggle to have their Abitur, but... till now everybody got it.
So that's great. That's good. Congratulations to all of you. You managed it.
Yes, somehow. Yeah. And I mean, can always happen. Even if you don't do sports, it can happen.
Of course.
A lot of times when gymnasts stop with their career, for example, because of the school, they think they will be better in the school after, but it's the opposite.
Yeah.
Because they don't have a structured day anymore. Yeah. They don't have all the help they have here.
Exactly.
And they stop their career. So it's more like a whole day fall in. And sometimes the parents or the gymnasts think there will be the solution, but I learned it's
not.
Never.
It's not. I have two girls who play football, soccer professionally. And one of them stopped and her grades like fell down immediately because, I mean, the sport was making her unhappy and she thought, hey, then everything will be easier. I mean, she never had any troubles with her grades. And the other one is still actively in there. And she's, I mean, I hope I'll see her on the national team someday. But she is very good, actually. She has very good grades, even though she has the least amount of time of all of her classmates. But she's very hardworking. And sometimes her parents like send in a note and they're like, so she spent Friday afternoon until Sunday late at night at a competition somewhere at a training camp. So please excuse her from not having her homework. I'm like, it's fine. Sit down, no worries. Yeah. Yes. So that's not a problem if the communication works, if the parents like let us know what's going on, if we know that certain things or injuries are going on that they can exempt from, I don't know, normal PE classes. I mean, why should a professional footballer participate in volleyball and risk, I don't know, injuring something, her knees or whatever? Yeah, so that's then we're like,
but then in the end, I have to say it's weird because I never had like real sports lesson. I think from the time when I was 11, for example, then I was with some friends and they were like, "Oh, let's play volleyball." And I don't know how to play volleyball.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Is so weird because everybody thinks you're a sportsman. You are good in all the sports somehow.
Yeah, and no, you're not.
I don't even know the rules of other sports, so it was.
So everybody out there, a general education is not the worst thing. So general knowledge in nearly everything, like even if you just dip your toe a bit, it's not the worst thing.
As a gymnast, I don't recommend playing basketball.
Nope, definitely not. I was
at
a school once in Nuremberg and there was the elite level center for Bavaria. And we had two girls there who like trained 4 to 6 hours every day at the center, and they were exempt from PE lessons and were able or allowed to catch up on the rest of their schoolwork to make that happen. And like her coach sent in a note, so don't let her play basketball. Like is not allowed to play basketball.
Her ankles are too important.
Yeah, and her knuckles and whatever. So that was a fun experience. And also great to see that the school made it possible on an elite level. For her to pursue the sport.
Yes, of course. And now they also have to get grades even in sports.
Mm-hmm.
Back in my time, it was a little bit different. It was more easy somehow to not have a grade in one
subject.
But now it's not possible for your Abitur.
You need all the grades. And even if you can't do it practically, you need a theoretical grade. Yeah. You have to write a test or do a presentation or something.
They have to do actually both. They have to do theoretically and.
That was the really great thing I got to do in Hesse. Because in Bavaria, I couldn't do a sports Abitur. And in Hessen, I got it. And I had to do actually volleyball and gymnastics and dance. Yeah. So got my 15 points there.
Yeah.
Easily.
Congratulations. So at our school, it's not possible to make the Abitur in PE. In arts, yes. In music, I don't know. Sometimes, I don't know. It's always a complicated system. It's always
this
on the
so
change.
It's so weird because PE is so important. Yeah. I mean, for all the
and not just
society,
like
not for the
doing
health, for the
not mm-hmm. just doing the elite level practical thing, but learning about all the things. Yeah.
How your body works. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like
it's unbelievable. I mean, how the health of the of the society is not so important somehow.
Yeah, and it should be. I mean, if anybody from the Kultusministerium is listening, no, it's just I think that like PE classes in schools should focus more on showing and introducing different sports to get kids to find something they actually like that they could pursue outside of school, and then like really coaching them, teaching them, not just give them a grade on how fast they can run, I don't know, 100 meters, because I always sucked at this. Like I got good grades in like the technical stuff on like volleyball and basketball, technical
swimming
grades.
Technique.
Yeah, I got grades, grades.
Swimming, like kind of
on the time, I always got the worst
like
grades.
Not so good.
Like my PE grade dropped in the second semester when we went outside to do the athleticism. Because I really, I can't throw a ball. I can catch it in a nice way, but I can't throw it far. And
or
that's
just up.
Yeah, high. Just upwards. High,
high,
yes, but not far. Yeah, so it should change a bit, like from knowing more about the things and executing them right instead of very fast or very far or very
focusing
strong.
Focusing on preventing injuries as well.
Yes,
because
yes.
A lot of, I mean, watching football players, like unprofessional football players, is such a pain because you're like
they're stretching.
You're not like warming up. What are you doing? You're going to injure yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
But well, it is. I mean, it is getting better. I think also in the clubs that are focusing more on that as well. But well, children.
Yeah. All right.
So
we have. A longer question next, and we've been talking
how
for quite some time.
How we decide between individual and group, I think,
yes.
was another question.
Yeah, so I always imagined like they come here and then it is decided, but they are invited only for the group or either individual.
And of course, we have our own, I mean, our own girls here, and but actually we never have a discussion about that. Most time it's very clear.
Okay.
Somehow it's very visible because individual and group is very different. What you need to do, what you need to be able to do is very different. So already now I know who I'd like to have from the smaller girls for the group, for example. And I'm sure Julia also has already
her eyes on somebody.
Her eyes on some girls. And very rarely we cross and then I mean in the end we have Isabel, she's responsible for the whole picture, and of course she sees everything more, I mean, because she sees what is important for Schmieden, for the whole sports in Germany, and in the end she takes the decision. It's also all only a recommendation. For example, if I'd like to have one of the individuals for the group, I can just ask. If they don't want to go to the group, I cannot do anything.
Okay.
So because I have two gymnasts on the top of my mind who switched from individual to group. So Noemi Peschel is like one where she also communicated, well, I have a greater chance to go to the Olympics if I compete in the group.
Yes.
Then that unfortunately didn't happen. And now Melanie Dagel as well switched.
So it is also the decision of the girls?
Of the gymnasts themselves.
Of course.
Good.
Okay. We, for example, maybe we discuss before that maybe how's the situation for all of the gymnasts? Does it make sense to stay an individual? Maybe she's better for the group. Sometimes, somehow in Germany is that, oh, if you are not good enough for the individual, you will go to the group. But actually, I think to work in the group is much harder. And it's not at all like this. If you're a good individual, it does not mean at all that
you're
a
good
group gymnast.
Yeah.
It's,
I
very
mean,
far from that. And I think also the group is doing very, very great achievements. And I'd like to have it a little bit more valued sometimes.
That is also something we talked about while driving here, that obviously the individuals get much more attention.
Yeah.
And
we know
worldwide their
names,
are
their
known. And then there's just Team Germany.
Yeah, because the individuals, of course, they participate under their name. The group just participate for...
Yeah. And maybe the commentator lists their names quickly while they're walking onto the carpet, but...
And now, of course, individual is also more successful.
Yeah.
And also, it's fair enough that everybody knows Dasha. It's...
okay.
I'm very happy about this, and everybody is...
But I... Well, as a hardcore fan, like, when you participated in London, I knew all your names. Like... That was I just knew, because when you want to watch it,
you care about it.
And I imagine that on a national level, in each country that is like a bigger thing also to be in the group, and you have like more fame or yeah. or something. But I well, I don't know, are the girls like bothered by this?
No, I don't think so, and I also shouldn't somehow. But I just, for example, if you look at Italy, I mean, of course, the group is also very successful. But I think for the girls in Italy, it's a great, great thing to come to the group. Yeah. And I think should be somehow the same in Germany as well.
Absolutely.
I mean, like, it's a big honor, actually, to come to the national team. And for some, it is. With Melanie, she was, I mean, she's a very nice girl, and she was very grateful to come to the group. Mm. She already before we qualified, she communicated she wanted to go to the group. So it was not her waiting if we were qualified or not. Okay, she jump in. The decision was done already before.
Okay.
And she took this decision. Yeah. She said for herself she'd prefer to be in the group. And I think that's a very, very good example of how good individual gymnasts can turn to a very good group gymnast also, because she's very good and we like her in the team a lot.
And what you said about being in the group is actually harder. I actually get that in a way that you have to become one of the team. You have to hide your individuality a bit and become part of one bigger picture. And so you can't just fully shine as your own kind of, and like use your own charisma or whatever you have to show to the audience. Of course, it's great if you get that. And of course, all the girls have different solo parts and everybody is on the in front at one point, but they all have to work as one and all have to need to have at least a similar facial expression, if not the same, and exude the same love and fun and enjoyment for the sport and everything. So I absolutely am with you on that page. It's a lot harder to fit in with a group than to do your own thing.
Yeah, if you have a bad day in individual, you just have a bad day. It doesn't matter. Next day, you will have a good day.
You're responsible only for yourself.
So if you it's have okay. If you have a bad day in the group and the next day the other one has her bad day and the next day. So we have five girls and we have five bad days. We work on one day in the week. So it's not possible. And also, we ask from the girls, I mean, to always put the team first. And it's very difficult for a long period to always, I mean, step back and to say the team is the first. So it's mentally, I think it's very hard, but it can also give you a lot. I mean, you can feel the strength of the team. You can support each other. You are there for each other. You always have somebody on your side. Just you're not individual.
It's and give in and take,
you can be whoever and whatever you want, and in the group it's not possible like this. And then of course they have to, I mean, how many apparatus are flying in one routine of us? I think I didn't count, but maybe 200 or 300 throws. And they all need to catch them and throw precise. So the responsibility is very, very high.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's why I think I don't want to say it's more difficult. For sure, for the body, individual is more difficult. But for some points, group is very, very difficult and not easy peasy.
Yeah, definitely not.
We will go to the Olympics, something like this.
Exactly.
Maybe the last question concerning the formation of the group. At the competition Gymnastic International in Schmieden, the commentator mentioned that there is no replacement gymnast for the group nowadays. There's a whole extra group which trains parallel, the same routines. How does this work? Is this a new thing or has this always been like this?
I mean, the idea is there for a long time, and when I took when I got the job, I mean, I was thinking it's very important to have a second team, because my experience that with the replacement gymnasts does not work at all, because they are just on the side. They are working maybe 10% of the rest. Also, they don't feel good, they don't feel valued. They are, nobody's caring about them, nobody's looking about
the understudy.
It's very bad. And if somebody's injured then and you want to use your replacement gymnast, she's just not ready. I mean, not prepared at all. So the idea was there from the beginning to have a second team. Now we call a second team, but actually I'm always trying to find some better, that is a little bit more valuing because they're very important to us, and second team always sounds not
team
so good.
Team A, team B.
So if somebody has good ideas,
submit that, everybody. We're open for suggestions.
Just give yourself
a group name
that doesn't refer to anything, to maybe status something or something.
Like, this, yes.
Like we were the RSG Angels back then.
Oh, yeah.
and later.
So we have angels and devils.
For example, yeah. That could work.
That's what we did on Carnival.
Yeah, we were
the coaches were the devils.
Exactly. Oh, that was fun. That raises a fond memory.
I think.
Yeah, we had shirts and jackets and everything.
And they had little wings on the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, the RSG Angels. Okay.
Cute.
Yeah.
So this is more or less, it was clear. And we have a full second team, I think, from 2019.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, in the second team, I mean, the idea is they come, for example, the young gymnasts, when they come with maybe even 14 from the junior group, 14, 15, they need to have a little bit time to develop. Mm-hmm. Or when they come from far, they need to adapt to the school system. Or when they come from individual, they have to understand what the group is. To give all the gymnasts a little bit time to adapt, to understand what's going on in the group, what's all the work about, and to not have this in the first team. Because the first team, they always need to show good results. I mean, we cannot do any experiments with the first team, actually.
No.
It's always they need to show up on the international level. Mm-hmm. So we are trying to remove this from the first team and have a very stable first team and remove all this fluctuation more or less to the second team. Because also, of course, happens that after a few months, somebody realizes this is too hard for me, or the school system is too difficult for me, or it's not my dream anymore to be part of the group. And then maybe they will leave again. And if this would happen to the first team, it would be a disaster.
Yeah.
So we are trying to move all this to the second team and to really have a time to develop the young gymnasts, to have also first team that is older, to not have maybe not have the school at all, to have more grown-up girls who are more responsible, who can take better decisions, who are there because they really want to, because sometimes maybe also just the parents want them to do something. So this is the whole idea, to have all this in the second team and to build up, I mean, it's not always working like this, but to build up very nice gymnasts. And when they come to the first team, they are mentally and physically so ready for all the challenges they have to cope with.
Yeah.
This is the idea of the second team.
Okay. And it's only logical. And I hope all the girls in like the second group feel as honored as they should be, because they're on the way to move up to the first group. I mean,
you're not good enough, but you're getting there.
You're getting there. And there will be an older gymnast who's going to retire, and then you'll take the spot, and so on.
And actually, it's always who's best will participate, I think. I mean, for me, this is the principle. So if somebody from the second team turns out to be very, very good and maybe better than one in the first team, of course, we have to do some changes. And I always say, the better the second team is, the better the first team will be.
Mm.
Because they will push
each other.
They will push from down, more or less. If they will show up very strong, I mean, the first team, they will feel this, and they will work much better directly.
Yeah. Exactly.
And concerning those changes you might have to do, how does this work when, for example, a gymnast retires and the choreography or the exercise stays the same, and you have to replace one gymnast? I mean, you don't take like the gymnast in the second group who has exactly her part. Like, you take the best, and then the gymnast has to learn like
Most other of steps. The time we try to take the best. But if there are two maybe on the same level, of course we will take the one
who doesn't have to learn anything.
Who did the place already. And for example, if just one of the girls is sick for one day in the first team, I will just take the exact position.
So you have
the
like
team.
Five or six replacement gymnasts actually.
Yes.
Okay.
Right now we have in the second team two juniors, which is a little bit a pity for the second team because they cannot compete like this.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's not allowed with two juniors inside. And this is the difficult part in the second team. More or less is, I think, very good for the gymnast. They have a time to adapt to realize what is going on, if they really want to do this and stuff, and to learn everything. But of course, they need to have some goal and some competitions, even on a small level, on a national level, for example. But this is very, very difficult. And there's a little bit of the difficult part of the second group to find competitions, to find even, I mean, they need a gym that is high enough when they want to compete. I mean, of course, we can say we will send them to all the national competitions here, but mostly they have a low ceiling. And then what can they show there actually?
Exactly. Yeah,
I remember at our club, we always had a Christmas presentation at the end of the year, and the girls from our Leistungsgruppe, so the girls
the
who
high level
competed on a higher level, they also wanted to show our skills, and they always put on a show, but most of the throws just didn't work because it was on a stage and the
ceiling
was
high
even
enough.
Lower. So this was quite a shame because they could have shown so much more, but it's just not possible in the facility.
Yeah.
So
The three or the two or triple turns underneath just like turn into one or maybe even none because you can't throw high enough. So that's always a shame.
And they have really trouble to adjust to that because just we were like, we knew that we couldn't throw that high because we always trained in that gym as well. But you could see with the smaller gymnasts, they threw high nonetheless, and then the apparatus hit the ceiling and you were like, oh yeah, well, you noticed that just now.
And what was such a shame, I know we had like an obligatory element that we needed to put in every routine. Like there was a high throw and it needed to be higher than 4 meters. We couldn't do it because the gym wasn't high enough. So we only got to practice it in the gym that we actually had the
competition in.
And then it was very difficult to adapt within like 2 or 3 hours during the warming up phase and to like get it done. But still, I mean, it very low competing level. But still, it's annoying if you have like not the conditions that you actually need. So, And moving on from all
to
the decision making.
Favorite question.
Yeah, my favorite question. As a choreographer myself, I want to know, when a new group routine is created, how involved are the gymnasts in the process? Is there maybe an external choreographer, or how do you decide which music to use and how are the leotards going to look, et cetera, et cetera? Is this like a democratic decision or more like a friendly dictatorship?
No, I mean, in the beginning, it's always the music choice. And actually, this is the most difficult choice. It takes... For us, always the longest. And so in this period, we ask everybody, all the girls, all the coaches, even
if
coaches
you have
from,
an idea, bring
from
it
other
forward.
Clubs. Because, I mean, for the group, always you need something. I mean, even now with all this artistic score, we need to put the canon, choral, the effects, the dynamic changes. So the music needs to give a lot already somehow. So this is very, very difficult and everybody's involved. Sometimes I feel whole Germany is involved. And so when we found the music, normally I mean, it's always after World Championship or something. So we just start with the training and me and the girls, we start to think about some elements, maybe cool elements and or good collaborations or how to get more points. So it's just a very creative process of trying things and finding things that work and look good.
I imagine this to be so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite parts because also there's no pressure.
Just encouraged to try yourself out and figure out what
and
you want to do.
And then after, I don't know, 2-3 weeks, for example, like this, because then the girls are already a little bit better in shape. And then the choreographer comes. I mean, also I did some routines by myself already, but right now choreographer comes.
Which ones?
Kamilia Dunavska.
And which choreographies did you do?
Which one I did?
Yes.
The balls 2020. I mean, the corona 20 and 21. And also the hoop and clubs in many different versions from 2021. And actually, I think the routines from 22, I changed them so many times. I don't think that there was something left from the original choreography. And the same for 19. So just now, since we work with Camellia, because I like her style so much, and it really fits us and the group. And she's working also with us, I mean, on a daily basis.
Yeah, we saw her earlier, right?
Yeah, okay. Right. She's here, let's say, 1 to 2 weeks per month. Mm-hmm. And also most of the competition she's with us. So she's really like a specialist working with us. And we work very, very well together. So I'm very happy to have her. And yeah, she also did that very famous junior hoop group of 2014. You have to watch.
Okay, we have to look that up.
We have to rewatch that, definitely.
It's so, so good. It's Bulgaria Junior Group 2013-14, I think. Mm-hmm. Very, very nice. And, I mean, this was the time when I start to enjoy her routines.
Yeah.
And somehow she was here because she also worked with America for a while, and they were here. And I spoke with her, and then it was end of 22 after the World Championship, which was very bad for us. And I somehow had this feeling we have to do something, and I asked from her to do the...
Well, you got a silver medal, didn't you?
Yeah, in the team. But the group...
Yeah,
but still, come on.
If the team was rubbish, if the group was rubbish, you wouldn't have gotten the silver medal.
The hoop routine was very bad. They threw the hoop out of the carpet. I mean,
that happens. Come on.
But no, it's okay. I mean, somehow. But after I had the feeling we need to do something. We need to get stronger somehow. So I spoke with Isabel, and we decided to ask her to come for the choreography. And from that time on, more or less, we worked together
with great results.
Yes.
What about the leotards? Who decides on that?
Yeah, and then for the leotards, it's different. Sometimes Camellia, she has something in her mind, because sometimes with the music, with the
curves, she just has a vision.
She just has a vision, and then we follow. Just, I mean, I trust her so much. We just follow her vision. Sometimes she also, I mean, she says, "Oh, I don't know, let's see." And from one of the girls in the group, her half-sister, she's a designer.
Ah.
And she did some of the designs. I mean, she's giving some design proposals, and then we are going
in. Great.
So it's different. Sometimes that way, sometimes that way.
Our last leotards were also done by a friend of...
A group member.
Yeah. And she was like... having all these different options, and was like, I imagine this one or this one maybe. And then we went to Schneiderin. Oh my gosh, I can't remember. The seamstress. Then we went to the seamstress and had them made like that. And
she was
also my friend.
The seamstress was so disappointed. She was like, "You wanted it black."
She wanted to give us a lot of more color. And we all like had the same design, but everyone picked their own colors with the pattern on it. So we were recognizable as a team, but everybody was individual still.
Cool.
So that was what was fun for us. And we realized quickly, oh, but if we ever decide to start as a team, that's not working out anymore, because everything needed to be the same.
Yeah.
But that's how we did it back then. It was a lot of fun, like coming up with the different designs, and everybody put their own different glittery patterns on there.
Even having your own leotards in that level that we competed in was something really special.
Because you had like group
leotards
from the club.
Had a few leotards, and you just looked what fits me, and I wear that.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of money to invest in something that you just do like once or twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
But this, I remember this day for the rest of my life, when we went there and she measured us, and we got our leotards, yes.
But of course, nice. Always very special. And I think the girls also, they like this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I mean, also for the group now, we also have the possibility to sue once per year, because some countries, they have like nearly every competition is something new. Of course, we don't have that much money.
No.
And we also only sue 5 leotards only, not 6, just to save some money.
Like, in the past, there were like 6 a lot.
Because,
I
mean, also always 6 girls could go to the Olympic Games. I have to admit, I prefer in the group to work with five. Mm. Of course, now we work with six because of the situation mm-hmm. that Melanie came in. Mm-hmm. But I prefer in general to work with five because with the six, you always have this situation that two of them, they're
not a regular,
not working the same amount. Mm. So, and then for this one apparatus, they feel more pressure because they only have the one chance somehow to show what they can do. Mm. Now, even with the Olympics in front of us, it's clear that we can only go with five. Mm-hmm. So for the ones who only are in one apparatus, it's always more pressure. Sometimes I mean, in former teams, they told me they don't felt like really part of the team mm-hmm. because even sometimes when they were tired, for example, the other girls mm-hmm. just said, oh, you just do the half while you're tired or something like this. I mean, if the team dynamic maybe is not so good. I don't have these problems now, but
that happens, absolutely.
I mean, so always with the six, it was not working so well. Mm. And when you have five, you just have your five, you have them very close and very strong and you can work with the five. Exactly. And they are all same. They all have the same rights somehow. Yeah.
And you can't forget that such a group dynamic is especially tricky when you have still adolescent girls. Yeah. They're not grown-ups. No. We must not forget, even though they have a professional career and they are probably at the peak of their elite level, they are still growing young teenagers, let's say it as it is. Of course, they're not as fair to everybody and the group dynamic changes, etc.
And we push them all the time to their limits. And when you are on your limit, you also behave different from when you are in like nice position. You can be friendly to everybody, but when you feel so tired and you gave your last, I don't know, everything, mm-hmm. and then one of the others maybe is doing mistakes. Of course, sometimes you will feel some kind of anger or something like this.
But I think in this situation, everybody can relate to that and have empathy for
one another. Yeah. And that makes a good team in the end to always stay together and to help each other to move on and to know, I mean, just to know that all of them is giving their best. Mm. For me, it was always, if I knew that all my teammates, they're just trying to give their best, just not working, somehow can happen. Somehow it makes a big difference from when you think maybe one is just, not working full power or something like this. This makes you really angry.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
A bit more personal question. What was your favorite body and apparatus difficulty as an active gymnast? And what do you now like to include in routines that you enjoy
watching?
Most?
Yeah,
actually, I have no favorite apparatus. Just as a gymnast, I didn't practice a lot with the clubs because, you know, we have this in the juniors, you have four apparatus. Then in the seniors, I came to the groups. And as a junior, just in my first junior year, I had clubs. Mm-hmm. And then never, ever again.
Okay.
So I feel like with the clubs on a basic level a little bit. But I like to play with them now too. Yeah. Because I always want to have something in my hands. I really prefer to work with the group. For me, so interesting. Mm-hmm. I also prefer to watch group. Mm-hmm. I think the level right now in the groups is amazing. And the concurrence is so strong. Mm-hmm. And it's so fun to watch and to follow the groups.
Yeah.
But which apparatus, I cannot really tell. I mean, five hoops is very nice for the groups, but we had five hoops so much, no?
Yeah.
In the last years. Mm-hmm. So it will be nice to have something new. And actually, in the next year, we will have some new combinations I also never worked on.
Can you reveal that already?
Yeah.
Is that well known?
It's five ribbons mm-hmm. and hoop and ball.
Oh, great.
That's
a great combination.
And hoops and balls we had last time, 2004 in Athens,
mm-hmm.
and I enjoyed so much. So I'm very curious.
Can
to
do
work.
A lot with that as well, the combination.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always am curious how Yeah, like we talked about earlier, the process is to try out what can I do with those different apparatus? How can I throw the one within with another?
Yeah.
Or what can I bounce off of each other?
I remember just now, maybe we will get to see that later. In your mixed apparatus routine, there is a part where the...
bunched up.
The stick of the ribbon is fastened to like the middle of another ribbon, and it's just a twist.
Yeah, it's just a twist. Just like this.
How does this stay? Because it just looks like she's gluing it on and...
No, she's just twisting putting it one time around and then just to take it out is more difficult.
Okay.
Yeah.
Actually, I just had this idea. Let's put the stick there.
But it's great.
That's the amazing thing.
And
like
it's so innovative. It's innovative. And that's what I love about the sport during the last two or three years. There's so many new things coming up with the new code of points. I just love how everything is developing. And as we already mentioned, the expressions and the artistry score is just, makes it so much more fun to watch even for the audience.
Yeah.
And I hope also to perform for the girls when they can show more of their personality instead of just like adding difficulty after difficulty after difficulty with having these dance breaks in between. So it's just really great to enjoy.
But still, I mean, we have... I would not say limited, but the rules somehow, they give us the direction in which we have to think also. So before we will start, for example, with the new routines, first of all, I have to somehow read this code, and I mean a lot, and to try to find out with which collaborations you will get the most points, because in our business it's about points. So first of all, I have to find out somehow we have to do, I don't know, many CR3s or something like this. I have to calculate all the possibilities and I will decide, okay, we have to work more in that direction or that direction. And then always in the first year of a cycle or a new code is you just try and you, of course, then you look what the other teams are doing and you get just inspired somehow by time and by the other teams. Yeah. And it has to develop. I think even the first year of this cycle, the routines... So it was 22, because 21 was the old cycle. The routines were by far not so nice how they are now in this year.
Yeah, I think as well in the group routines, there is so much more possibility to see new stuff, to see new things. And because in the individual, well, it's one person, you are limited in what you can do. Of course, if someone invents a special move, that's cool and exciting, but in group I think you're always like flabbergasted at what they can do and
it's
what
so
they come
innovative.
Up with.
Yes. And in individual you can do very nice elements and they can be so elegant and or fast or something.
But in the end it's just execution. Whether you like see the difference.
And then if it's the question, maybe they can find some nice masteries or not. And now it's, I mean, a lot of rolling in the balls and the hoops. And
we talked about that as well. Rolls and rolls and then another roll. And then
this, I mean, this is the rules. This house. But we need to have rules. I'm not, it's just the rules somehow, they always give the direction to how the routines will look like.
Exactly.
Therefore, it's also good that the rules change.
Yeah.
So you can just like
evaluate it
and find out what works best.
They always try to follow, I mean, to learn also somehow from their mistakes. But always if you, now maybe they will decide rolls are, I mean, they put this with the rolls because they were thinking ball is apparatus, we need to roll more.
Yeah.
It was a time where everybody was just doing small throws and bouncing like something to have it very fast. And a roll takes a long time, so they were giving more points to the rolls. Now everybody's just rolling. It's a little bit like a circle, and it's very difficult to take the right decision, I think.
It's a lot of calculating that goes like into building a routine and to come up with the choreography instead of just like what does the music tell us, what does the music allow us to do. And as you said, you need all the different aspects. You need some slower and quieter aspects, you need something with the ribbon, you need some more dramatic elements, and like putting that into 2.5 minutes is just Very exhausting, yeah. Incredible. But if we come across something nice, we'll send it to you. We'll let you know.
Very, very nice. Yeah. And what? Then sometimes you have to see somehow we had this old hoop routine and I liked them a lot. But in the end, the team, they were a little bit too nice for the music, actually. The girls are a little bit too sweet. And they always ask, but what are we supposed to do with our face? Because I said, no, you need to more expression. And they were somehow, they couldn't feel. They were like, but what are we supposed to do?
That's I think, what you in our dance group always got out of the like teen girls who were like, yeah, well, I don't know how to improvise. Yes. And you're like, go in your bedroom in front of your wardrobe mirror and just put on some music and let out whatever comes out and just find what you are and what you can express.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is like a really important developmental step they have to go through, because you're, well,
to do this,
there are Christinas who like become 12, become 12, and then they're just a performer on stage.
Mm-hmm.
But not everybody is like that in at this age. So,
the overcoming the kind of shameful feeling, like showing a facial expression in front of your peers. I always realize that when they're in fifth grade, what I teach most or every year is that they're not afraid.
Yeah.
They just go for it. Mm-hmm. I'm just like turning these. I'm like, I'm giving you some music. I want you to move whatever you feel. And they just go for it. It's so much fun. And then I take this step. And I'm like, hey, this is a creative move. Let's put this in together.
That's and because then they're still children.
Yeah, they're kids. Mm. And then when they're like seventh grade, eighth grade, and they're like turning 12, 13, 14, they're like, I don't know how to move. I don't want to move in front of everybody. Can you tell us exactly what to do? And I'm like, oh, gosh. I mean, yes, but you have to feel it in the end. I mean, I can tell you what I want you to feel, but it's like it has to come from within. And I mean, as we said, they're still teenagers. Yeah, and I have to learn, and you have to kind of teach them and like unlock this.
Sometimes they can also feel it. For example, we changed the ribbon and balls. I don't know if you realize in the middle of the season.
Oh, yes.
So, and when we put this new ribbon and balls, they felt it from the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, and they felt this music, and it was fast, and it was smiley, and it was, I don't know, they could do
it. It was a lot of action. Yeah.
And they felt this music, and also they proposed all these movements to us. I mean,
but it's so cool.
That's because, they have a really great artistry score as well on that one, right? Mm.
So somehow they felt this directly. Mm. And with the hoops, it was nice from the beginning, but it did not develop. I mean, in any direction. So we were thinking now this time to take something, I mean, a little bit more easy music.
Mm-hmm.
The, with the tango, of course, it's very difficult. And it's strong, but it has a clear direction.
Yeah,
and
you
the
know
tango
what
has a clear way of movement.
And
expressions, especially facial expression, like being proud and like holding up your chin and like having the arm movements.
You're
putting out your chest. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, as an outsider and not coach, just watching the competition at the World Cup in Athens, the hoop routine, and now in France at the Grand Prix, the artistry level was so much higher in France, I think. And you could see it, like, they were on fire. And
because they already felt a little bit more secure.
Yeah.
Like, Athens was the first.
And they got a big score, like.
And they were just like, oh, let's keep the apparatus in our hands.
Yeah.
And then I think in France they already felt more secure with the routine. And let's hope now we are going to Sofia next week and they will show something better or similar.
But it's so great to see the development over one season. But like the first competitions, they're also, most gymnasts are still very wobbly and like mistakes happen. And it's like you're sitting in front of your screen like, oh no, what is happening? Like another one out of line or whatever. But then you like, it's the second or the third or the fourth competition and you're like, oh wow, they're getting really good because they're just more comfortable and the training gets easier and so on and so on. And it's just so such a joy to watch this. And I mean, you must feel so proud.
Yeah, sometimes.
Tell them.
I mean, I always see a lot of work all the time.
Yeah, obviously.
When I watch them, I'm very happy when they do good. And of course, after this world championship, I was very, very proud. Mm. But
you always see the tiny mistakes,
I
right?
I always see the mistakes everywhere. And somehow it was so funny because I found a video of the hoops, of the old hoops, when we did them. And I watched this video and I couldn't even understand why I liked the routine in the beginning. I mean, it was, I couldn't understand anything.
Okay.
It was so, even the movements were so weird, not strong, nothing. But then somehow I saw it maybe in this moment already, because in the end, I always liked it a lot.
Mm.
And it's right. It's a big, big, big development by time. And because you're working with them every day, sometimes I don't see even this development.
Yeah, you have to take a step back sometimes and then let it rest for a day or two and then look at it again with fresh eyes.
And somehow my job is to always find the mistakes, and I'm always finding them. There's always something that is not the way I want.
And I'm sure they're very grateful for that, because that gives them their achievements.
And I have to circle back to one thing. I want to know, what body difficulty do you enjoy doing most, or like helping them to develop most? Like any skill?
We don't have so many body difficulties in the group.
But still, what do you enjoy most of doing? Like, is
practicing
it more like
turns or
jumps or whatever?
Jumps. I like, me as a gymnast, I like to jump.
All right.
I think because you just need your power and you can somehow do it. With the turns, it's always, I mean, if you find your axis or not, it's a thing.
Yeah, but
a little bit more
like
shaky.
Turning is always dependable on the day, I feel. Like there are days I can do a quadruple pirouette and I'm like, wow, how did that happen? And then are other days, like I fall out of a single turn.
There's just also some gymnasts, they are just talented with this. Some, they just feel their axis so well. I think they're not even thinking about this. They're just always on their leg. And
exactly.
For me, it was okay. I mean, I was not bad in turns, but not my favorite. To jump, it's
more like flying.
Yeah. That's what I always thought. Like,
and when you have
the
adrenaline, I mean, it's so dangerous because apparently it happened to me. I had so much adrenaline. I was jumping and then because I was jumping higher than usual, and I was like,
oh God, you rolled over.
That is what happened to me as well.
That happened to all of us, I believe, at
because
some point.
But the jump, I remember, felt so nice. Yes. I felt so good. I was so high in the air, and then it was like...
Yeah, for me, it was like a Kazakh jump, like at the end of the training, and I was so exhausted, and I still wanted to go through the routine one more time. And it was one
was
time too many.
And then
it was crazy time where you had to do 8 jumps in the rope routine. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was my junior year. Yeah. I was jumping.
In general, I think you talked about a lot of that already. What you enjoy most about being a coach and what parts of the job you wish you could maybe change or you could just live without altogether.
I mean, I enjoy really this process and to be part of this process and to work and to, I mean, the, first of all, of course, the creative process of doing the routine, but also I enjoy a lot the process after. I mean, to work on your baby more or less and to get it to where you want, because as I said before, somehow I have this vision in my head, and to follow this, sometimes if you see something and it's working and it's showing, the small moments when they are maybe so together in one moment and it's like, oh, so nice. And
very satisfying, right?
Yeah. And I like to work with people. Mm. I mean, this was also a little bit the decision between chemistry and sports, but I like to be close to people and to work. I mean, chemistry in the end can be a little bit boring.
Yeah, you can sit in a laboratory all day by yourself, maybe, if you want to.
It just depends on what type of person you are and what you prefer.
Yeah, still chemistry also is very, very nice, actually, because everything can happen. But
everything is chemical.
Not. I mean, you're not working with other people, and somehow this personal part is missing. To go to your limit, all together. Also, we as a coaches sometimes go to our limits for sure. The gymnasts, we have to push them to, and how to do it and how to not go too far, but far enough. And it's very, very, very interesting.
What would you ditch? What would you like leave out if you could, in like looking at coaching as a job? What would you leave behind?
Right. I mean, now actually, it's to travel so much because it's very tiring. I mean, when I started, I found it very nice. Mm-hmm. But now, actually, you're always traveling to the same places because the World Cups are always at the same mm-hmm. places. More or less, the every second competition is in Baku or something like this. And then you always, we travel on Wednesday, so we have actually no day off. Mm. We travel back on Monday, so the weekend is done. Your day off, if you're lucky, day off is your travel day. Sometimes we even work on our travel days. And when I was younger, it was more easy for me. But now I realize, especially after the last year, because it was also mentally very demanding, I felt a little bit exhausted. And this is the part where I would think it would be nice to step a little bit back. But on the other hand, for the girls, I found out it's better to have a lot of competitions. I mean, they need this experience.
Yeah, well, I have a quick solution. Just have more competitions in Germany.
What I wanted to say, exactly. Why don't we have more competitions here?
2026, it's down for Berlin, the EVAL Championship.
Oh, we're so going there, by the way.
That would be great. And we have the Universiade next year in Germany. I just don't know if we will be able to
send somebody,
send the team or not. Mm-hmm. Because
they have to be enrolled, right?
I don't know. Still, we don't know the rules like 100%. If all of them need to be
enrolled,
yeah,
just inscribe them for something.
Yeah, but when they go to school, how is that possible?
You can study next to school. Our brother did it.
Yeah, you can study like
Frühstudium. That's the name.
Yeah, or you could like just do some Fernstudium, like where you have like classes online, like on Thursday nights for 4 hours, and you can just like log on and something or not. Why do you do that? Yeah,
would be great. Of course, it will be a big event in Germany, and would be great. I think we still don't know. It's also not my job actually to find out if it's working or not. But would be great if we can go there. And yeah, of course. But that's a little bit, the traveling is the part. And especially because my husband is he's working in Switzerland, so we only see on the weekends.
Oh no.
And if I'm away on the weekends, it's like,
that's a shame. Yeah. But respect that you're putting up with this. I mean, having only like a part-time marriage, I guess it's really hard. But
actually for us, it's working very well.
Then it's good. Then I'm happy for you.
I mean, with all this training, we always lived in Weiblingen, so close to here. And he also studied chemistry, and he decided to go to Switzerland to work because there is a pharma industry and a lot of opportunities. And it was always, discussion point, this training, because I will say I will be home at 8, but then it's not going well, and from 8, or somebody needs to talk, or I need to talk to somebody from 8, it's 8:30, it's 9, it was never working somehow, because the job is like this.
And you have a longer break, like, during the day?
Yeah.
He doesn't get off, like, during the day, that's not working.
He's more or less, like, working 7 to 5 or something like this. So it's completely different to me. I stand up a little bit later and it's not really fitting very well. So we have our concept now. We are working and he's also, working a lot in the week. Monday to Friday we are working and then on the weekend we try to enjoy to have our time. But then if a lot of weekends are not there,
like packed with competitions. Have more competitions in Germany. So German Gymnastics Federation, if you're listening in,
we can go more often.
Exactly. All right, one last question that I wanted to know. Do you remember maybe a moment when and how you first fell in love with rhythmic gymnastics?
I think it was really from the beginning. I don't remember my first training, but I remember this first period when I started with rhythmic gymnastics. And I was so crazy, about the sports. I felt it so much. It was my thing. And I loved the part with the music. And at home, I always, because I didn't have clubs, because not everybody had all the apparatus in that time. So I took some pens And use them as clubs and I throw them and like with the two fingers, you know, throw two of them. And I did some routines for, I have the younger siblings and they always said, I was like coach for them. I did some routines for them and they had to work with me. And it was when I was 5 or 6. Yeah. I was already very clear.
Okay. Great. Dear listeners, you should see her eyes light up when she's talking about that because it's a really nice memory. And I remember myself, but you were probably not even born yet when that happened. And I've never told you because it was just a random thing on the street, actually. I was walking with my mom to church, you know, like the main street.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe to the library or something. It was a sunny day, maybe near the end of August, something like that. And you know, this one tiny street that goes up very steep uphill.
Yes.
Away from the church again.
School?
No, not that one. The next one. Mm-hmm. Okay, so she knows what I'm talking about. And there is this one house, and it looks very white and very summery. It has like a terrace, a balcony, something. And in front of that, there was like a pay show, something where you could park your cars, and it was empty. And there was this girl, and my mom knew her. She was maybe 15, 16, 17, around that age. She had like the star curly hair. She has this top with white and black stripes on it, and she was doing a ribbon routine with a white ribbon, and she was like just dancing out there in the sun, and she was like doing the circles and the snake motions and everything. And they were talking I don't know what they were talking about. It was just captured by her like jumping around and like dancing with the ribbon, literally. I have no idea who she was or who she is or if she still lives there. I don't know. I just, this was my first ever seeing that this was something people could do.
Mm.
And then I didn't even know that this was an official sport. It was just something like for fun or something. And then only when you started, like at our club, you started like earlier than me, like a year and a half earlier.
Actually, our cousin watched a routine on television or something. And she just begged her parents, I want to do that. And they found a club near us where you could do that like at this low level because she was already like eight or nine. That was the time when she said, you have to come with me on Saturday. And I was like, I'm going to the horse stable on Saturday, so I can't. And then I really had to decide. So I went there once and I remember the first training very clearly because our coach Jenny told us to point our toes, and I thought I was pointing my toes, but I just was like clipping my toes in. And she was like what are you doing? And that's okay. Right, now I got it. And then she like complimented my split leap, and that was like the time where I thought, I'm good at this. Like it feels great. And then I was like, yeah, well, riding isn't maybe my biggest passion. I just still love it, but I want to go to the gym. So that was like when I also got to know older girls who did this.
And one of your classmates
was also at that club. And
she's the one who designed, by the way, our lovely logo. Shout out to Mona again. she is like, we have been doing this ever since. I believe 2004 was when I joined you a bit earlier.
Yeah, like 2003. Yeah.
But I still have this memory of this girl like dancing. It was probably when you were, I don't even know if you were born yet,
probably,
but still.
Not.
So we've like asked all of our questions. Thank you so much, Camilla.
Thank you.
You really made a dream come true. Literally.
We've been talking for, I don't know, 1.5 hours. Maybe we'll cut it into 2 episodes. We don't know yet.
Maybe you cut something out when we speak in German or something like that.
We will crop that out. We have to because we want to everybody to be able to understand. Thank you for offering to do this, for being so nice and so welcoming. Everybody, TSV Schmieden is just the best. Yeah, everybody's so nice to us here.
And I just have to talk about this. We got here earlier and were able to watch the girls training a bit. And we got into the gym, and it was actually like the old part of the gym where the second group was training. And we stood there next to a door where we heard like music coming from, and we were like, should we go in there? And the door opens up.
And Dasha comes out.
Dasha just walks out, and we're like, oh my gosh.
And then she just looked at us, was like, so hi. I'm like, hi. I nearly started to cry because we're so, you forget that you can become so starstruck. And it's just a weird feeling because you're like, this is a 17-year-old girl. I teach 17-year-old girls every day. This should be normal. This should be fine. It's not fine, you guys. It's just weird. And you and feel like, yeah.
Watching them practice their ribbon routines and just watching Marga not in full leotard and makeup, just doing her ribbon routine.
Again and again.
I was nearly crying because it's just, that's what she made me feel.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm getting very, very emotional, and it's such an honor to be here and to get the chance to talk. And we hope that everybody who's listening out there and who's a fan of the sport gets a bit more insight to what it's really like. And
Follow RG Team Germany on Instagram, obviously, and all the other girls. We will make several stories, I guess, on this episode. We already have been kind of invited to come here back here sometime.
Yeah.
So if you have any ideas or questions you would like us to find out or ask, you can obviously send them to us.
And we'll find out if we can get maybe another interview session with some of the girls here.
Maybe with another coach or another gymnast. That would be a dream.
Let's hope for the best.
Thank you, Camilla. That's our episode today. Make sure to follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Amazon Music so you never miss a new episode. And make sure to follow us on Instagram at discussing.rg.podcast as well. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, Camilla, you can join us in saying, don't forget to point your toes. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
We'd like to say a special thank you to Mona for creating our amazing cover art and to Jenny for sparking our passion for rhythmic gymnastics.